Support for The Front Porch comes from the Charleston Gazette Mail, with two editorial pages, one liberal, one conservative, kind of like The Front Porch. Check it out, wvgazettemail.com. And you're on The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, here with Lori Lynn, our conservative columnist and host. Hey, Lori.
Hey, Scott.
And Rick Wilson just blew us off again. You know where he is?
I heard that Rick is going to be the only man at the Women's March this weekend. You know, the big, the Women's March in D.C., they let him special dispensation.
He's got this thing with the ladies, I tell you. And we're going to talk today about Jim Justice. That political earthquake isn't just Trump taking office. I mean, Governor Jim Justice is making big changes here, too. And it started with his inauguration.
And that I will faithfully discharge
the duties of the office.
The duties of the office
of Governor of the State of West Virginia.
Of Governor of the State of West Virginia.
Lori, what was the biggest surprise from Justice's inauguration speech?
Well, I think the biggest surprise was the specifics, or at least he hinted at something specific. He waved around this blue binder thing and said he has a plan for how he's going to streamline the education bureaucracy in the state.
I have an education plan right here that I'm going to submit immediately for people to review. It's going to be the elimination of a bunch of unnecessary agencies. It's going to be a look at education in a different way that has never been looked at for a long, long, long time.
Now, he didn't show us the plan. We've requested to see the plan, and the governor's office has said that's not quite ready yet. But just the fact that he has this thing in his hand and was waving it around has a lot of people really interested and, you know, wondering if their jobs are on the line.
Terrified, yeah, I think, exactly. Would be fair to say for some people. And, of course, is he talking about the regional education service agencies that have been on the line or the State Department of Education staff? What's he talking about there?
We don't know. The RESAs that you just mentioned have been kind of the perennial target that looks like kind of a low-hanging fruit that they could maybe cut. And who knows? Maybe he really doesn't have the specifics yet, and this was just kind of an empty binder. If he really did have the specifics, it's a little bit unclear why he wouldn't have, you know, gone into it a little bit more, at least post-speech.
You know, it's something interesting about Governor Justice. A lot of people know that he coaches basketball back in Greenbrier County, still does. But he's also a former teacher and has a certificate. And so probably hearing from classroom teachers about their frustration over rules and regulations coming down from Charleston and D.C.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that even as he's talking about cutting and streamlining, he said, I think our teachers should be paid more. Now, how on earth are you going to do that in this budget environment? I think that's basically a non-starter anytime in the near future. But he did at least throw that out there. He thinks our teachers are underpaid. They should get a pay hike.
Speaking of revenue, Governor Justice mentioned in the inauguration speech the need to raise more of it to deal with what's estimated to be a more than $400 million budget hole next year.
Let me tell you this. There's no question there's waste. And there's no question that we've got to do something about that. But we have to raise revenue. We have got to find a way to raise revenue. We cannot continue to just kick the can down the road and drain more of the rainy day and just continue to just kick the can because we're not going to go anywhere.
So, Lori, is this going to happen in this legislature? Are they going to have a serious conversation? Because it appears that the leadership has thrown down the gauntlet and said no new taxes.
Yeah, of course, they said that before, and we got increased cigarette tax last summer in the special session. So I think there's obviously political value to saying, look, this is a non-starter. I think a hike in the general sales tax is very unlikely. The communications thing, I could see that happening. I think what Carmichael and Armstead are really saying is no tax hikes without significant budget cuts. And what they would really like is the more targeted cuts, eliminate some agencies, eliminate positions, really get in there and do some significant cutting. And I think in exchange for that, they might be willing to talk a little bit about the revenue side. I don't think that's a lost cause.
I think the scale that we're facing this year I don't know if people have really realized how much bigger it is than previous years. Governor Tomlin has cut an estimated $600 million out of the state budget over the last 2 or 3 years. They're looking at a budget hole that's almost as large in this 1 year. And so for context, the state police cost about $80 million. The Promise Scholarship is, I think, about $40 million. You could eliminate huge things that people think are very valuable and important and still not get all the way there. Another thing I want to talk a little bit about was just style. Here is a guy, he went up to the podium with props. Not only did he have the blue binder you're talking about with the education plan, but he also brought a tackle box
and an axe. That's a great visual.
I carry this tackle box and this axe in my car every day because I want to remember her, and standing right beside her was her little daughter. I got out, and I'm ashamed of myself that I should have given her every dime that I had on me. I gave her $100 for the tackle box and $100 for the axe. She had no clue who I was. She looked at me with tears running down her face and said, "Mister, you don't have any idea how bad I'm hurting." Now, we got to do something.
Yeah, it's really, I think, emblematic of his style. It's very personal. He loves to tell these personal stories, people that he meets, things from his past. It's very different from what we're used to. I mean, you could not imagine Earl Ray Tomlin hauling out a tackle box from behind the podium. It's just, but people love that. You know, I think Justice's personal style was largely what got him elected, so he would be silly to abandon that now, and I think it's very effective.
Big vision guy, a positive, sunny sort of vision, that sort of thing. What did you make of the part of his speech where he talked about the leadership of the legislature being his friends?
Yeah, I thought that was very effective too. He referred to them by their first names.
There are people here, many, many people here, but there's Mitch. There's Tim. There's another Tim. There's Roman. Those people I'm going to look at as friends.
And I think that that is sincere. Remember, this man was a Republican until, 2 years ago? So when he talks about them being their friends, I think there's a lot of credibility behind that with the legislature. They're not looking at him necessarily as somebody who is, you know, this longtime ideological foe of theirs. And we'll see how long that lasts. Of course, it's going to crumble to some extent once the legislature comes back and they start butting heads on things. But yeah, I think it was a good start.
The GOP in West Virginia is going to have to figure out, just like the Democrats in Washington, got to figure out how to deal with this sort of very plain-spoken, right now pretty popular guy. What do you think their strategy is going to be? What would you do?
I would wait and see. I think it's going to be hard for Justice, given his folksy style, to have the kind of bully pulpit that a lot of Democrats are going to wish that he had. I don't know how hard he's going to really be willing to go after Republicans if they're intransigent. I think his instinct is going to be to work with them if at all possible. Remember, they have large majorities, so he is really at their mercy to a large extent. I mean, obviously they have to work together, but it's not like they can peel off a couple Republicans and, you know, get a majority to work with a Democratic minority. So I think the real question for him is how combative he's going to want to be. I think that's the first thing we're going to have to see.
And we'll also see whether we can come to a budget this year. Last fiscal year, we almost shut down state government over a much smaller budget hole. So we'll
and
have
ended
to see.
Up doing a tax increase to plug that hole.
And also the rainy day fund, which he talked about wanting to protect. The other question is, where is the money going to come from? Yes, you can eliminate some agencies. It saves you some money. I also, from my experience covering the legislature, there's this thing called special revenue that people don't pay much attention to. General revenue is what your taxes go to. Special revenue is what fees go to, let's say, to get a permit, or maybe it is a lottery proceeds. And special revenue hasn't really been touched that much in the recent Governor Tomlin budgets. I would expect to see, and I'm hearing, that you'll see a focus on special revenue, but it's not going to be easy. All right, we're going to come back in just a minute, and we're going to talk about Sherlock, because Rick Wilson is not here to stop us. So hang out and hear that in just a minute. But first, if you're a Sherlock fan, you might not realize that one of the ways that Sherlock is made available in America, and also one of the ways that even a global phenomenon like this gets made, is through your donations to West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Your money turns into your enjoyment. That's just one of the many things we do here around education, around emergency communications. There's just so much that your donation goes to. So make an investment in your own good listening. Go to wvpublic.org, click that donate button, and help Sherlock. Thanks. I know that's exactly what Lori Lynn's donation goes to.
That's right. It's 100% earmarked for Sherlock.
What is it about that show, by the way, that you like so much?
Oh, gosh. I mean, first of all, I am a huge sucker for anything British, and particularly anything British detective mystery, you know, any Agatha Christie. I actually prefer Agatha Christie to Sherlock Holmes, but it's such a clever adaptation. Watching the very first episode, Sherlock, you know, puts on the nicotine patch, and he says and Watson says, three patches, and he says it's a three patch problem, and it just everything. It's stylish. The production values are really good. A lot of money goes into it. The acting, Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock, Martin Freeman as John Watson, really, really good. I mean, I think you can make the case for Martin Freeman's John Watson being the best Watson ever on screen.
He took something that in the books is sort of a bumbling foil,
right,
and turned it into an emotional heart of the show.
Very compelling character, exactly.
I've noticed on your Twitter feed that you've pinned a tweet to the top of it from Sherlock.
Yes, Mycroft Holmes facepalm. Mycroft Holmes is actually one of my favorite characters. He is played by Mark Gatiss, who is one of the writers and creators of the show. So Mark Gatiss pretty much has every Sherlockian's, you know, greatest life ever. He creates and writes this show, and then he gets to play Mycroft Holmes on the screen.
What is it about Mycroft that you enjoy?
Well, Mycroft is even smarter than Sherlock.
That's true?
Yeah, Doyle actually wrote that. Okay. So Mycroft is more intelligent than Sherlock, but he's also very lazy. And in the books, he's really fat. They did not do that in the show, except for the Victorian adaptation. They made him really fat. A lot of fans were very angry about that. They felt that it was, you know, tasteless and fat shaming. Yeah, Mycroft also, you know, literally is the British government. He runs the British government. So you have all these scenarios where he kind of swoops in and kind of, you know, takes care of things. And that we saw that very much in this fourth season, I think.
Okay, we're going to spoil things.
Yeah,
now.
Spoilers alert.
All right, so, you know, turn off if you can't stand it. But what I found interesting in this season, in the last couple seasons, actually, was the introduction of Mary, who ended up marrying John Watson and then getting killed in this season. And that is a character that's not in the books at all, right?
She is in the books, okay. In a very minor way. She's a client, and then he marries her, and then, you know, you don't see anything of their married life, really. And then she dies, and they never talk about how she dies or what she dies of. It's sort of speculated that she died in childbirth, but we don't really know. But yeah, they made Mary a much bigger deal. I have some complaints about what they did with Mary. I thought they kind of tried to have it both ways with her. When they first introduced her in the third season, well, when they first introduced her, she seemed very, you know, nice and benign. And then all of a sudden she's revealed to be this terrible assassin with this really dark past, and she shoots Sherlock, and her secrets are so deep and vile that Sherlock ends up having to kill this guy who was trying to blackmail her. They set her up for this really interesting, a lot of people thought that she was actually going to be, you know, very villainous and maybe the big bad villain of the fourth season. Instead, she turned out to be this assassin with a heart of gold. And, and you know, all she really ever wanted to do was be married to John Watson and have his babies.
You just weren't buying the conversion.
Well, they wanted it both ways. They wanted her to have this wonderful, dramatic death and self-sacrificingly die in John Watson's arms. She died taking a bullet that was meant for Sherlock. And so I think, you know, Stephen Moffat, the other writer who is the showrunner for Doctor Who, which I actually don't watch, but...
What?
You know, yeah, I've tried and I don't know, I can't get into it. He has gotten a lot of criticism over the course of his career for how he writes women. And I never really was very bothered by it until this season. I thought the way that he did Mary, the scene
Speaking of how he writes women, I gotta say, Sherlock's sister, and she is the most brilliant of them all, right?
Right. And she's kept on this secret island by Mycroft, except she wasn't really contained because her mind is so powerful. She can kind of hypnotize people into doing.
Did you buy her by the way, that she was like just in her like Silence of the Lambs, like, and I'm glad that they made a nod to it explicitly, yeah. But Silence of the Lambs, like, she's in this cell, people come and they get hypnotized by her and do her bidding. Did you buy that?
No, I didn't. And I thought that was really the real weakness of the final episode in particular. It was just so fantastical. A lot of people compared it to Saw, you know, like a horror movie. Like, what am I watching? It was so different. And look, I will say, I found it very entertaining. I thought, you know, I was spellbound. I was very interested in what's going to happen next. As an episode of Sherlock, though, it didn't really feel like it related a whole lot to what had come before it. And I think that would be my major criticism.
So what is it about Sherlock, the character, as played by Cumberbatch, that is compelling?
So in the very first episode, you have Detective Inspector Lestrade explaining the character of Sherlock Holmes to John Watson, who's just met Sherlock, and Lestrade has known him for several years. And he says, Sherlock Holmes is a great man. And one day, if we're all very lucky, maybe he'll also be a good man. And that really is the entire show in a nutshell. It's the progress of Sherlock Holmes from a great man, a brain, you know, very callous, not really awake to the emotions and situations of people around him, just sort of a calculating machine.
As he calls himself, a high-functioning sociopath.
Exactly. From that to someone who has friends, who loves people, who... you know, is actually very sensitive by the end. And in a very nice note, you had Lestrade in the final episode, you know, nod to that and say, you know, Sherlock Holmes is a good man. So I think that, and Cumberbatch has been great with portraying, you know, the evolution. And it all does really come back to John Watson, the presence of John Watson in his life. You know, of course, he cares for Mary and he cares for, you know, their daughter and Molly and, you know, Mrs. Hudson, the other characters. But John Watson is really...
he's the catalyst that makes that happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So now we're coming to the end of our show, Sherlock Talk. And
my favorite topic.
we usually have a Bible verse from Rick, but instead I think you've got something from the show.
In the words of John Watson from the second episode of this series, it is what it is. And what it is shit. Sorry about that, Mom.
There's something about, now that I've gotten to know you over the last year or so, and that this is one of your favorite shows, and that Mycroft tweet that you have pinned at the top, I think you know a lot about Laurie Lynn by knowing about Sherlock. I think there's something really interesting about that intersection. Well, would this be your favorite show?
Oh, yeah. I
of all time?
Oh, absolutely. I don't watch a whole lot of TV. And I actually resisted this. My sister, for a couple years, I didn't start watching it until the first two series had already run. She kept saying, oh, watch this BBC Sherlock. It's so good. And I'm like, ah, whatever. And I sat down and watched the very first episode and just, you know, with a smile on my face. And ever since then, I've been completely hooked. It's and even just being part of the word fandom, which I feel so old to be using a word like that, but some of the most intelligent, creative, perceptive fans in the world. Certainly hugely enthusiastic fans. And it's just been cool to be a part of that.
That's Lori Lynn. She is our co-host, conservative columnist and lawyer and Sherlock fan, as you've heard. On the Front Porch, I'm Scott Finn, executive director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. See you next week.